Drought, storms, extreme weather conditions, the rise of sea levels, the loss of ecosystems, and dire predictions. If you follow the news about the environment, the context behind the headlines, you've noticed that it's not a pretty picture. Add to this President Trump's 2017 decision to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and you might be forgiven for asking, what can I do? And what does it mean for us in Columbia, Missouri? I'm Janet Saidi on Intersection Today. We're talking with two people who spend their lives, or at least their day jobs, tackling this question, what can we do? Barbara Buffalo is the City of Columbia's Sustainability Manager, and Raghu Raghavan is the University of Missouri's Sustainability Manager. So yes, you may have guessed, we're talking on Intersection Today about sustainability. We'll explore how we as a community and as a campus compare to other places and how we can do better. Welcome, Barbara and Raghu.
Hi, Janet.
Okay, so that's not a pretty picture in my intro. Do you get asked this? How do you stay positive in your work?
Yeah, and I imagine, like, I mean, in part, people always assume, like, there's nothing I can do. It's so dire. So how do you work on this every day and stay positive? I guess you just have to kind of have that personality, right, to be able to stay positive.
What do you think, Raghu?
I'll concur with Barbara. Yes, we do need to have that kind of personality. I don't have a problem staying positive at all, despite the sometimes grim news.
Right. Yeah, because I think it probably helps that because, like you say, Raghu and I spend most of our day job working on these issues, because we are able to see all of the hope and the action that is happening locally. We get to see it from what our community members are doing or our coworkers. And then we also get to see what other cities are doing for advancing sustainability and climate action in their community. So we get to see those like hopeful moments of change. And that gives us hope for continuing change.
So it would be great to hear more about that, Raghu.
So I work with a lot of students in my office, and I get to feed off their energy. I'm fortunate that I get the best students on campus to work in my office. So while they are apprehensive about their future, we do like to portray their future in positive terms. So there is a lot to look forward to if the right steps are taken, if the right actions are taken.
And it's by the way, it's a lot of pressure to put on two people to give you that intro and then say, so what do you think? And it's up to everybody to educate themselves, right, mm-hmm. about what they should be doing. And it's up to us to figure out a way to keep going and to stay positive,
right.
and do what we can. And also, it's a lot of it is about the messaging, isn't it? So is that a challenge, just getting the message out there that there is some hope and that there are things that you can do?
I'm not sure so much of a challenge on that there is hope, because, right, we try to thread that through every environmental education and outreach event that we do and piece that we put on social media and in newsletters. I think the issue more is that it's such a broad issue with so many different, like, interlocking pieces to it. So people sometimes feel like, I know I should, for instance, recycle, but I don't know if I'm doing it right. And there's a lot of details to that, right? Because it's a resource. It's a material that you're trying to make sure is reused and reused well. And so it does matter how you do it. And so trying to narrow that down into a, 150 character tweet or interesting infographic that actually sticks with people's mind on how to do it right, that's where the challenge is. So I feel like we just, you know, we partner with our local organizations a lot and try to get a lot of the information out there. But it's really about repetition and okay. having like the same information out, consistent messaging.
Okay.
So for us, messaging has indeed been quite a challenge to, one, to communicate the gravity of the situation and then the actions that people need to take.
Okay. Let me back up a little bit and just ask, you both have sustainability in your title. What to you is sustainability?
Well, I like to go by the most common definition for sustainability, which was provided by the Brundtland Commission, which says sustainable development is meeting the needs of the present without compromising the needs of future generations. So it's simple.
Yeah.
So I like to keep it that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say we use the same one. We use a little bit of, you also have like that idea of like quality of life in it when mm-hmm. you kind of expand upon it. Where you talk about, you know, you can still have a good quality of life now. It's not that you're sacrificing. It's just that you might be changing.
Sometimes that definition, which I have seen and seems like a good one, is expanded to include sort of human rights, issues mm-hmm. as well. Do you appreciate that expansion in your work and seeing
Definitely.
It in that umbrella?
Yeah. Well, it's necessary.
Yeah, it equity.
Is necessary. Yes.
So when people talk about the triple bottom line, they're talking about people, planet, and profit, and the idea that you have a thriving economy, that you have people that can succeed in every walk of life, and that you're not negatively impacting the planet that you live on and the environment that we're in.
Yes, human rights is central to sustainability. Without human rights and justice and so on and so forth, there cannot be sustainability.
Right, there's that issue where we talk about a lot. And so Raghu serves on our Mayor's Task Force for Climate Action Adaptation Planning. And one of the things we talk about is equity as a frame by which or a lens by which you review all actions that you're proposing to change.
So that's interesting when it comes to the messaging, too. I think that a lot of us, maybe in grade school, were taught that it's about the Earth, be kind to planet Earth. And maybe it's hard to capture people's imaginations about, you know, we all enjoy the Earth around us and the outdoors. Mm-hmm. But it's also about people. It's about us. It's about our health. It's about families. And perhaps that's helpful in that definition.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, and we think about when you said that, you know, in schools, I think that's why I love some of our partners like Missouri River Relief who talk about, you know, we all live downstream. And so like any actions we have, it does potentially have a repercussion on another. And we're all neighbors in this world.
Okay.
I agree.
We're friends.
Yes. We'll see if we can find something to get you to disagree on. Just kidding. Let's talk about the past. Barbara, you came in, it was 9 years ago this month.
I know. I was just thinking about that. And I was like, oh, and I haven't saved the world yet. Like when you talked about the intro and I'm like, that's my job.
I know. There's so much pressure on you.
Yet. Yeah.
What was it like coming into your role at that time?
You know, it was pretty easy in one regard in that we had a grant that was funding it. And the grant had very clear deliverables. And so that was what I focused on. And it's really nice to have clear deliverables. But I will say at the time, sustainability offices within communities was so new. And it helped that Columbia already had a history of sustainability actions. We did not invent this idea for Columbia to work on it. You know, we had already had a lot of like the Get About program where we had people with alternative transportation. We had already had a voter initiative for renewable energy in our electric grid. So there were already those pieces out there that it's not we reinvented it, but we did help focus some of our efforts. So that was nice to build upon that foundation.
That is nice. What about you, Raghu, when you came into MU 3.5 years ago?
3.5 years ago.
What was it like?
So when I came in here, I was apprehensive. I moved here from Washington, D.C. So I was somewhat apprehensive. But I was very fortunate to come into a situation wherein, one, I had a very strong student body pushing for sustainability. And I also came into, so I work under operations, and there was a solid team in place, which were pretty serious about pushing for sustainability, too. So I came into what I think was a pretty good situation overall. I was fortunate.
So you said the student body at MU mm-hmm. was, you found a driven student body. Do you feel like the MU student body is driven comparatively to other schools? Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the students I'm talking to, some of them help produce this, that they wonder, like they're wondering how serious their peers take these issues.
So there is a small group of students that is very, very driven on okay. the sustainability front, very driven. And we're fortunate to have them here on campus. Yes, amongst the wider student body, there is an element of a lack of awareness, some apathy. But there's a small core group of students that is very, very driven on the sustainability front. And so I'm fortunate to work with them. And then the team that I work with overall, energy management, planning, design, and construction, landscaping, and within operations, they're also they take sustainability very seriously. On campus facilities.
How does MU campus compare to other campuses? I know in we scored high in, was it engagement, which is kind of maybe what you're talking about?
So we scored high on numerous fronts. We use a tool called STARS, which mm-hmm. is an acronym for Sustainability Tracking Assessment and Rating System. The rating system within that is along the lines of LEED. So mm-hmm. If you're really good, you get a platinum rating, or else gold, silver, bronze, and so on and so forth. MU is rated STARS gold at this point. So we're doing pretty well on that front. And for schools our size, we're in the top 40. So for large schools, comfortably in the top 40. So we do very well on the sustainability front, despite our serious budget crunch over here. We lead the SEC in terms of points in STARS. So we're number one in the SEC at this point. We do very well on campus engagement. We've done very well on curriculum, on energy management, on greenhouse gas emissions reductions. We've done very well. From our baseline year of 2008, we've dropped our greenhouse gas emissions by over 50%. So we have several LEED Platinum buildings here on campus, several LEED Gold. Despite our budget crunch, we've done pretty well on the sustainability front.
That was my next question. What kind of challenges does the budget crunch present?
Well, so resource. Many other schools have at least three to four full-time staff on their sustainability, within their sustainability office. I make do with just two. In fact, I lost one staff member. So despite we could work on a lot more projects if we had more staff and more resources. But despite that, we've done pretty well on the sustainability front.
What are the criteria that MU's not ranking high on with STARS that you've got your eye on that you'd like us to get better at?
Well, so overall, we do reasonably well on all. It's incremental progress on each one of these categories. So we could definitely do better on our recycling front, but there's room for improvement on several fronts. STARS has 65 categories.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's a lot of categories.
I thought there were about six. So.
No, right, yeah. 65 categories. Okay. We could make progress on every one of those categories. But the low-hanging fruit is what Bob Red brought up some time back, which is recycling. We could definitely do better on that front.
Does that mirror what you see, Barbara, in the city?
Yeah, well, it was interesting what you said first about the student body. It makes me think of just any community at large, right? That there's usually a smaller dedicated group. And then at large, it might not be in the day-to-day thoughts of everybody. So it's thinking about how you can have that tie-in. But as far as like the opportunities for improvement, we know for the city of Columbia that we also have opportunities for improvement. I'm really excited about the development of our climate action adaptation plan, because it's helping bring light and also help us focus our efforts. Because like your 65 categories to review for STARS, I mean, there's tons that we could do for sustainability in Columbia. And so trying to think of, okay, well, what's something that's going to have a big impact, right, on either our vulnerabilities to climate change or also our, I guess, addition to, so like how do we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions? Mm-hmm. And so kind of focusing those priority areas to what will make a difference, what's feasible, what do we have the resources to do is something that we're doing right now. And it can help you breathe, because otherwise, you know, come July after the after the cap is adopted, I might just be like, oh, my God, I can't focus on all this stuff.
Well, you mentioned actually clear deliverables were mm-hmm. kind of with a grant, you know, to deliver deliverables on was really helpful when you came in. Does that kind of extrapolate out to the entire task that we all face in a way as a planet, is like break it down into manageable goals, which is probably what you all are doing and how you're surviving.
Right.
Tell me more about the climate change adaptation plan.
Yeah. So, you know, when President Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement in 2017, there were a lot of cities and mayors who said, well, hold on, like our city is already seeing the impacts of climate change and we want to help reduce our impact on it as well as prepare for it. So Mayor Treese signed on for the Global Covenant of Mayors for Climate and Energy and for Climate Mayors, which basically said we're still in. And so to date, there's 418 mayors that are signed on for Climate Mayors, and that represents over 71 million Americans. And so for us locally, that meant, okay, well, let's do these steps. Let's inventory what our greenhouse gas emissions are. Let's set some reduction goals and let's create a plan for helping meet those goals. And so in August of last year, the city council set carbon emission goals of reducing 35% community emissions by 2035 and 80% by 2050 and 100% by 2060. And then they also set municipal goals. So when Raghu talks about the things that they're doing on campus, we also, as a city organization, we know that we take care of the community, but we also have to work about our own house. What do we have control over and what can we help reduce? So council set 50% emission reduction goals for our operations by 2035 and 100% by 2050. Which is daunting. And then I think about how old my daughter will be then. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she's going to be older than I am. But when we go through this action plan with our task force and with our community members, we're looking for where are those opportunities that we can save. And part of it's where do we get our energy from? How do we use energy in our built environment? How do we reduce, reuse, and then recycle the materials that we get? And then also, how do people get around, and how do we take care of the natural resources we have? Going forward, the task force has they're developing their draft plan right now. It'll go out for public comment in April, and then we'll have a mayor or a city council work session in May, and then hopeful adoption in June of this year.
Okay.
Well, and then the real work starts, right? Right.
We want to dig into that a little bit more, but first let me just say that you are listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Janet Saidi. Our guests today are Columbia Sustainability Manager Barbara Buffalo and MU Sustainability Manager Raghu Raghavan. We're talking about sustainability in Columbia. You can see more on this discussion at kbia.org. Barbara and Raghu, can you give me a sense of the progress that we've made here locally in Columbia since you both came on the job? Your sense of the progress.
Not claiming it for credit for ourselves, of course. Well, yeah, I guess I could say, I mean, even though, and Raghu is going to like shame me because theirs have gone down, even though the community greenhouse gas emissions have actually increased over the last 10 years, they have not increased at the same growth percentage that we've had for population and our economic impact.
To measure MU's progress, essentially, our baseline year is 2008. So if we were to consider our greenhouse gas emissions in 2008, at this point, we've dropped them by 51%. That's outstanding.
Yeah.
It's outstanding. In the last 3 years itself, we've dropped our greenhouse gas emissions by 30%.
So how does that compare to other campuses? Is this a part of a trend that campuses are doing well in this area, or is MU against the trend doing well?
MU is against the trend by overall. So we're amongst the leading campuses in the country. So for on-site renewable energy generation, we are at this point number two in the nation.
What do you attribute that to, besides your own hard work?
Well, so the great foresight shown by energy management in shifting fuel to biomass from coal.
Well, I was just going to say the other thing when we think about for progress is, and this is just like slight, small anecdotal, but, you know, when coming in 2009, talking about in 2010, talking about, you know, me going out to these meetings and talking about, hey, we should change our operations or we should do this. Like, right, well, okay, well, that's what Buffalo says we should do. And now it's hearing this discussion happening in other departments without the fact that it came from sustainability.
So, yeah, so Barbara, you mentioned all these goals and you mentioned that it's daunting to look at 2050, 100% reduction of emissions.
Yes.
What to you are the big challenges in meeting this for both of you on these goals? So what are the challenges?
So the campus has also committed to go carbon neutral by 2050.
Okay.
How we get there, it hasn't been mapped out accurately at this point. So the daunting part is figuring out at least the home stretch as to how we're going to get to carbon neutrality.
Yeah, and I would say the piece that Raghu mentions is that a lot of times you kind of know what you have in your near term, and then it's not knowing what's going to happen. So for us, we're putting into our plan that it will be an iterative process. So it will evolve over time as opportunities arise, and we can see a new improvement that could be added. The biggest daunting thing is that just like the campus, the city is, you know, resources, making sure that you allocate them well. When we had a community workshop in November, we had over 200 community members attend. We were asking them, how do you think we should invest our tax dollars? So if you want this to be a goal, do you want us to reallocate it from one section of our budget to another? The way that we're seeing it internally is that what are the improvements we know that we as a city need to make? And how do we then budget accordingly?
Okay, great. You all probably have obstacles that you're combating all the time. I'm thinking one, especially for you, Raghu, might be apathy. Maybe for both of you, but I just kind of feel like when you're dealing with a campus with students who have their own stresses and, you know, kind of self-absorbed, which we can all understand, apathy might be a one. Maybe myths as well. You're probably doing a lot of myth busting. What would you say about general obstacles, apathy, myths, misinformation?
Well, sustainability, in a sense, is countercultural. Hmm. So it will have to, at some point, if not right now, revisit the notion of consumer culture or the habits that we have at this point. Finding happiness in consumption is something that will have to be seriously revisited.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah. And I think that's a good term, countercultural. Yeah. We're going to have to think about our behavior and what we do differently. Yeah. What would you point to as specific things that people are going about their day doing? I'm thinking about washing machines and dishwashers, and also just going to the store and buying things and Christmas gifts.
Yes. So consumption is,
eating meat.
That is all of that I kind of lump into consumption.
And so, I was going to say, it doesn't mean doing without, though, right? Yeah, when we talk about these things, it's more of also how you choose to do it. So when you mm-hmm. mentioned going to the store, well, maybe it's either how you get to the store, right? Or making more frequent trips to the store within walking distance to your office rather than going, you know, that really big trip on Sundays or going driving your car multiple days a week. Like, how can you kind of reduce your consumption or you have your behaviors affect your consumption?
So a lack of consumption does not imply austerity.
Right.
Sure. We're not talking austerity over here. What it means is that, so what is the end game of sustainability? Mm-hmm. What is it that happens if we're sustainable? In my opinion, the end game of sustainability is a sustainable community, valuing relationships and community more than finding solace in consumption. That is the end game of, in my opinion, end game of sustainability. So within a consumer culture, this might feel threatening at this point, but it need not be. In fact, it could be a richer existence.
Yeah, we always talk about at Christmas time or the holiday time, valuing experiences over stuff, right? So people are always like, oh, well, what's the best gift to give for somebody who's into this? And I'm like, not a gift. Mm-hmm. That's the best gift to give your environmentalist friend or, you know, your niece that really wants to reduce their impact. Give them an experience or spend time with them, quality time, dinners together, those types of things. Well, that's where our positivity comes into play. We can see the bright side of a different world.
That's great. I think we could have an entire half-hour discussion just on that. let me just take a minute to remind our listeners we're talking about sustainability, how it might lead to an even better life, actually. When it comes to a sustainability, where do we excel already? What do we need to improve? You're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Janet Saidi, and our guests are Columbia Sustainability Manager Barbara Buffalo and MU Sustainability Manager Raghu Raghavan. Check out the full conversation and more at kbia.org. Can you both tie together for me a little bit and for listeners how the consumption directly ties to our future and a sustainable future and reducing global warming?
Right. So consumption is one of the hardest things to measure when you're pulling about your data for your, for instance, for us, our greenhouse gas emissions inventory. But when we talk about consumption, we're also talking about consumption of fuel to transport around. And 27% of our emissions here in Columbia are transportation emissions. Consumption is also the waste of electricity and natural gas in our buildings that, you know, especially if you're like heating and cooling spaces that people are not in. Having that is an issue, or not having it be an efficient home. When you talked about hurdles, I think some of the things with the consumption discussion is related to what Raghu said, where it's not about austerity and it's not about changing to lessen your quality of life, or for when we talk about hurdles, changing the way we've done business either or the way we operate, like for instance, in an organization like the City of Columbia. And so how do we present it in a way that there are benefits? And a colleague of mine talks about the co-benefits are actually what we should lead with. The improvements to our health, the improvements to our environment and our everything that we love and love about our community are really what leads it. And the side benefit is reducing greenhouse gas emissions or preparing ourselves for climate change. And so when we talk to our coworkers about designing this future, it's not about changing how we design pipes and roads. It's about making sure that you're planning for the future and the impacts of climate change, but also in a way that hopefully reduces our addition to it.
In fact, I feel that within a sustainable community, the quality of our life will be much better than what it is at this point in time.
Do you feel like people tend to feel like this changing our culture is more difficult than you think it is?
So one of the things that I think make it easier to achieve these is if you have it happening at both the house level, like, right, like the choices that I am making within my family, but also if we are helping direct policy that also reduces the impact. So it's not necessarily just relying on you and your house to turn off your electricity when you're not there so you're not adding to our greenhouse gas emissions. But can we also have a policy about having your home be efficient in the first place? Can we have a policy about making sure that the energy that we're providing to you is cleaner energy? And then that way we're all sharing in the responsibility of what will make the world a better place.
Picking up from where Barbara left, yes, individual actions are very important. But civic engagement, acting as a community, is also as important.
Right.
So we have to, it's got to be the personal and the political with the community.
Yeah. So that's something that both of you are working on as well,
right,
is policy.
Right. So the city has a core value of stewardship. Like, this is something that we are entrusted with, both our taxpayers, like financial resources, as well as our natural resources. And as we design for both reducing our impact for climate change, but also responding to it, we have to be resilient for our community members. And so that's why we're taking the Climate Action Adaptation Plan very seriously. When it comes up, we're talking about the policy resolution, that it is the thing that helps umbrella all of the plans that we do as a city organization, so that we are not impacting negatively and we're preparing for these changes.
Last question is there anything that we haven't covered here that you think is really important that's on your radar?
Well, I don't think it's an option. Going sustainable is not an option. It is a necessity. It's an imperative at this point. Whether we're positive or negative about it doesn't really matter. You know, we have to get there. It is existentially, for the species, it's a very, very important step for us. We have to get there. It's not an option.
Okay.
And I think for mine would just to be, just for, like, you know, I guess your listeners or my coworkers who are listening, is to think about those small behavior changes or little things that you could see doing in your life to make a more positive impact. And then also being aware of how over time we'll have to do changes, and maybe talking with others about improvements in your own office space, in your own homes, or in your own organization that you could see doing to help make an impact, and that we're all in this together. So hopefully everyone will be involved in as we develop it.
Okay, that's great. Raghu says, you don't have to like it, it's happening. And Barbara says, we're all in it together. It's going to be good. All right, that's Intersection this week. I'm Janet Saidi. This program was produced by Betsy Smith with the rest of the Intersection team. Molly Dove, Emily Aiken. Directing today's show was Mark Johnson. Thanks to Barbara and Raghu for coming in. And you can see more on this conversation at kbia.org. Thanks for listening.